For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code LOVEISLOVE for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's make the babies and then come tell me about them. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I think their point is, and I get it, like, when they're taking a kid out of one of these situations and putting them in a new home, the bar is higher. It's not just, can you keep this kid safe and dressed and get them to school and all the basic things that most parents have to do. You're getting a kid who's been through these things. Can you support them in the way that they need, because, like, knowing their background?
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie, your gay host, and this is the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our beautiful identities. I don't know why I just spoke like that, but it's true. And it's fitting because today's episode, I'm taking you all the way to the UK, and I'm going to stop doing a terrible accent because our guest is actually from the UK. He's Scottish. And he lives in England. And it's a really great episode. It's we are diving into adoption over there in the UK, namely foster to adopt. So it's a really, I'll tell you what, when I was listening to Liam's story, my big takeaway was, oh my God, I'm so stressed out. This is stressful. This is stressful. So it's a story, and you're going to hear Liam's beautiful story to how he and his husband became fathers. And it's a real testament to, once again, the real intention we queer folks put into creating these freaking beautiful families of ours. I mean, the hoops we go through, the studying up we have to do, the legal hoops. It's just a testament to intention and why queer parents are really just the best. Like, that's just hands down. And, you know, I've been talking a lot about how we should all be getting our second parent adoptions right now if you live in the States. Like, get it. You never know what's going to happen any day now with the state of things. And I'll tell you what, Liam's story really puts second parent adoption into perspective, because I talk a lot about how long it took me to do it, and I was dragging my heels through the whole process and it took me forever. But when you hear Liam's story, you're going to realize, okay, second parent adoption is just a quick little dip in the pond. Here we go. Let's go. Let's do it. Okay. So it's amazing. I'm excited for you to hear Liam. Before I roll the tape, I have a little cold. Excuse me if I'm clearing my throat a lot or coughing. I hope I don't cough at you, but I got a little cold. And I'll tell you what, when you have a partner like I do, who is going through chemotherapy — my wife has breast cancer, in case you don't know that, I've shared that — but when you have a wife going through chemotherapy, and I'll tell you, it's a journey. It is a journey, a big, fat, crazy, scary, awful journey. You can't get sick. I have this cold. I can't have this cold. It's like these little things that pop up in your life when you have a sick partner and you have little kids that have to be taken care of. I can't afford to be sick right now because she is sick. It's so funny. It started with, like, And if you don't want to hear about my wife's cancer journey or my experience of it, you can just look in the show notes. I put the timeline in there and you can go straight to the interview. You don't have to listen to my little sob story here, but I don't know. I feel like I should talk to someone about it. I haven't started therapy yet, so y'all get to be my therapy. So when we first found out that my wife had cancer, breast cancer, all of a sudden I was feeling lumps everywhere. I had breast cancer too. And then I had the pain in my neck and oh my God, now I have thyroid cancer. And like, it's and maybe I'm just more anxious. We know this than most people, but first it turned into, oh my God, I'm going to have cancer too. We're both going to have cancer at the same time. How are we going to get through this? And now it's turned into this just like supreme fear of getting sick. Like I cannot be bedridden, right? I'm not that sick, right? I have a little cold, but it just made me think about really the fears I have surrounding me personally getting sick. Like who's going to do all the things if I get sick? And honestly, she's a lesbian wife and she's a badass. So she's still doing so many things. She's a badass. She's a honey badger and she pushes through so much. Not that I'm saying she should push through. Don't get it twisted. I'm not saying that, but she is a trooper and she's still handling, I joke, more than a lot of my straight friends' husbands are handling with the kids. Sorry, not sorry. Love y'all and I love your husbands, but they need to step it up. Sorry. Your straight husbands. But yeah, so that's going on. And one other thing, I've been talking a lot about social media and how the landscape of social media has changed with the new regime. I just went to just put up somebody else's post that I found funny in my stories. And I wanted to add my little avatar. You know, they have the new avatar that you can really personalize to make it really look like you. So they invited me to do it a while back. So I changed my avatar to look like me. Actually, I made her look like way cooler than me, to be honest. Like she's badass. I was like, yeah, she's cool looking. but she's got short hair and she looks tough and also extremely feminine because I am really, really feminine and I very strongly identify as female. I went in to put my avatar and the face has changed on my avatar to a man's face. Literally, y'all, I'm not even kidding. You have to go look. I'll just keep posting my avatar so you see it. Or maybe I can find a way to put it on the video of this here episode. But I don't know who did it. I know I didn't, but I don't know who did it. But they made my avatar a man. It's a man's face with earrings. Not lying, y'all. It is. I don't know. Am I being paranoid? I know. I think the whole world's on fire. So everywhere I turn, I think somebody is being deceitful at this point in my life. So maybe I'm just being extremely crazy paranoid, but y'all, is anybody else noticing something like this? If you are a woman with short hair and you have an Instagram avatar, can you go check and see if they changed your face to a man's face? Or if you're a guy with long hair, can you go check and see if they changed you into a more feminized version? Like, I'm so confused. And did I do this like one night when I had too much wine? I don't think so, but it's quite possible. So somebody weigh in for me because my mind is going all kinds of crazy places right now. Anyway, that's it. That's my two cents. Thank you for being my therapist until I get my actual therapist to deal with all the shiz that is happening in the world and in personal life right now. Okay, let's roll the tape. Helen, Beulah, they're even tired of me being paranoid. They're like, you just need to record this and go out and get out of our hair. They're not even real, y'all. I don't have assistants that sit in my house and smoke and drink whiskey, although that would be fun and it would be really hard to not join them. Oh God, I'm giddy. I'm in a weird place right now. Anne is actually right now getting her chemo. I have to go meet her right now. So anyway, let's roll the tape. I love y'all. I hope you're staying safe out there and keep taking care of your mental health like I clearly am not. Okay, let's roll the tape. Let's listen to Liam's story. It's a good one and it's a real testament to how badass we queer folk are. Let's go. Jerson, Helen, Beulah, please roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Liam.
Hi.
I'm very excited to have you here across the pond, as we say. Where are you coming in from, Liam?
I'm in the north of England, where today I can't decide if we've had snow, we've got sun, we've had rain, we've had it all today.
Oh, wow. We're finally getting some nice, kind of nice weather in New York. Like, it's not freezing cold right now, so I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm used to it.
And Liam, you are originally from the place I want to move to, right?
The north of Scotland, yes. The best part of the world.
Is it? I need to. I've never been to Ireland. I've never been to Scotland. I was in London for like 2 days. That's it. That's the extent of my English journey. I want to move there, and I hear it's great for the gays in Scotland.
Do you know we get a lot of things right now, but growing up, less so.
Not so much. All right. And you're not there now. You're in England.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Let's just get right into it. You know, I'm going to time you. Let's do your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Here you go. Ready, set, go.
So, good morning. I'm Liam. I'm originally from the north of Scotland, now living in England, moved down for university, met my husband, bought a house, had a kid, stayed. I like to say I'm in my very, very late 20s, being born in the second half of the 1980s, which I'm sure makes me in my late 20s. Found your podcast through another gay family podcast and thought, I have a story that's a little bit different.
I love it. That's it. We did it. You did it. And we do have a story that's a little bit different. You emailed me and I was like, hey, so you want to come on?
I know. I was looking for stories like mine because I feel like I'm in a little bit of an island here. And then you were like, tell yours.
Yeah. I was like, hey, why don't you come tell it? Because I'm not sure if I have one like yours. We might have some adjacent to yours somewhat, but not completely like yours. So I'm really excited to dive right into your story. Let's take it back to Liam, growing up in Scotland, and kind of let's hear a quick nutshell of your... Ooh, and what's the other podcast that you found me from?
Gaytriarchs.
Ah, my friends at Gaytriarchs.
Yes.
Oh, I love them.
I found
them
first, and they're much snarkier than you, which fits well with my humor, but then...
Are they?
I think so.
Oh, I feel like I'm very vulgar, but maybe I'm not. I'm just so wholesome.
Fewer dick jokes here, but...
Oh, well, yeah, no dick jokes. Maybe a couple of vagina jokes, but no dick jokes.
Yeah, okay.
Unless my guest makes one, which I'm totally into.
I can't say I'm qualified to make those jokes. So.
you're blushing, Liam.
I'm a gold star gay, so.
Uh-oh. Okay, here we go. Okay, so let's take it. Let's take it to Liam and his gold star gayness.
Yeah. So, yeah, I grew up in the... like 90s in the north of Scotland, where we had our equivalent of a don't say gay law. Mm. It was called Section 28 because it was Section 28 of the Local Government Act of whatever year it was, which basically was the Thatcher government telling schools, thou shalt not say gay, basically. So no mention of homosexuality was allowed at all at school. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Growing up, you know, I always thought, well, I knew this part of myself, but I never wanted to tell anybody. And the narrative we got from the media was, if you're gay, you'll get AIDS, you'll die alone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as a teenager, not a nice message to hear.
A little scary.
And, you know, like sex education wasn't there. If you got bullied for being gay, teachers could act on the bullying part, but not the gay part.
What?
And one of the stories that will always stick in my mind was I had a French teacher, and she was... a brilliant French teacher. Mm-hmm. And I love this woman. But one time we were writing an essay about, you know, what we did at the weekend. And I said something about going out with my boyfriend. And she was like, that's wrong. It should be girlfriend. And I was like, no. She was like, I have to mark that wrong. I have to say that's wrong.
Oh my God.
So because she couldn't, you can't promote sexuality is what they said. But that means even acknowledging.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was...
Was it actually your boyfriend or was it a boy who was a friend?
It was actually my boyfriend at the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was one of those buy now, gay later type. You know, I came out when I was 15 to my friends, but I didn't know how they were going to take it. So I said I was bi. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. No, I was bi for like 10 years.
Yeah. I was only 2 or 3 years. And then I was like, this is silly. Because all my friends start coming out as well. So.
Oh, perfect. Yay. So a lot of little Scottish... gay boys running around those streets with that don't say gay law. Didn't work.
It didn't work. Nope.
Newsflash. Doesn't work.
No.
All right. So grew up, then you came out, you're not bi anymore. You meet your husband.
And I was as good as living at his place by like August.
Uh-huh.
And then we officially moved in together in like November.
Attaboy. There you go.
When we decide to do something, we move fast.
Well, when you know, that's what I say all the time. I was a U-Haul. Every single relationship I've been in, long-term relationship, has been a U-Haul situation. It's just when you know, except the one that didn't last. So I don't know if I knew.
Well, it was right at the time. That's exactly what I like to say.
Yeah, exactly. And we're still close. I love her still, you know. Anyway, so, okay, so you U-Hauled it. You did the lesbian thing.
Yeah.
And when, yeah, so what happened?
When we make decisions, we then move really, really fast. Like, so we were renting a place. We had to move out. Our lease was coming to an end and the owner was moving back in. So we're like, okay, we need to find somewhere else to rent. And then I was walking to a viewing. There was a place for sale. I said, let's just buy it. So we did. We were getting married like 2 months later.
Oh, wow.
So that was all very stressful.
Wow.
And then same thing happened. Like next time, you know, it was a great starter home, but it wasn't right for where we were working, etc.
It sounds like you didn't even look at it.
We did. But then, you know, a few years later, an advert pops up on Facebook of, hey, here's some new houses that you might want to move to. And I'm the nosiest person in the world. Like, if there's like a show home, I'm there. I want to.
Me too. Same. Oh, my God. Same, same, same.
So we went and looked, and this was like the beginning of February. No, it was. Yes. Beginning of February. And we said, okay, nice. But too much money. Like, it's not for us. We were just being nosy. 2 weeks later, we were like, actually, let's go and talk to them again.
Oh, my God.
The following month, we moved in.
Wow.
And with my work, I had 2 weeks in the glamorous Cincinnati, Ohio with work.
Ooh,
so trying
fun.
To like sort a mortgage and a moving company and everything from a meeting room in Cincinnati while my husband's here trying to deal with everything. You know, when we do things, we move fast.
You sound even more impulsive than me. And I'm pretty impulsive. And my wife is too. So we make rash decisions all the time. And then we're like, what were we thinking?
It's always worked out so far.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we bought this house. That was in 2019. And we, you know, on our second date, we actually talked about marriage and kids and all the things you've said this so many times on your podcast. These are the important questions for those of us in the community, because can't make assumptions.
No.
Because there's not going to be like an accidental pregnancy and a, well, guess we got to get married now. Like, it has to be intentional. And you have, there's so many ways you can do these things that you have to be on the same page.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to make sure you're on the same page before you get too far into this. Because if you're not, if you don't agree on how you want to do it, you're in big trouble.
Straight couples as well, who, you know, they get married and then 2 years later, it's like, oh, wait, no, I don't want kids. And
right.
Well, now what?
Right, right. And I feel like that's more straight people than queers, because I feel like
we have those conversations.
We have to, because like you just said, nothing can be assumed. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Because all the rules are off for us, right? We challenge the rules. So you started talking about it early on.
Yeah. And then when we moved to this house, you know, it's a bigger house. We've got more outdoor space. We've got one more bedroom than we used to. All these things. It just makes it a better place. We've got a little play park like 100 yards that way. Like, it's great.
You had to fill a kid in there. You had to.
Well, that was the thing. We knew this was going to be a family home. This was like, you know, getting towards the end of 2019. And we thought, maybe we should start thinking about this. And then early 2020 happened. And we all know what happened there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we put the brakes on it. We thought, right now is not the time to try and do these things. Like, there's too much going on. I'm lucky my job I can do from home. Mm-hmm. But my husband's a vet. So he has to, you know, he's not going to bring a dog home and operate on the kitchen table.
No.
Over my dead body. So.
Or the dogs. Yeah. Oh,
but of
so
course,
sad.
They're trying to keep all their staff separate. So they're doing like really long days so that it's just two completely separate shifts that never cross. And, you know, it was a really stressful time. But now is not the time. And then, you know, the end of the pandemic was coming, we thought, in like August. We were so naive.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know, okay, maybe now it's time. Mm-hmm. And in that pause, you know, we had taken some time as well. We'd always said we wanted to adopt, but we took that time. We know people who have gone the surrogacy route, like gay men who've gone with a surrogate. And so we sort of did some research there, but we'd always assumed adoption. So like we weighed it up and we decided that, no, it's what we always said. It's what we wanted to do. So we're sticking with that choice. Mm-hmm. Adoptions here are not the same as in the US, I gather. it's all done through like your local council. There are private agencies, but they're not the norm.
Okay.
It's all done through like your local like city or county council. Where we are, five councils are very close together because we have like, you know, two cities on other, opposite sides of the river and then two more towns that are like butt up against them on either side of the river. So five councils joined together and said, instead of trying to do this on our own, let's pull resources because we cover a fairly small area, actually. So they made this one master agency. So I went on their website, I filled in the form. I was like, just looking for some information. You know, if you've got like a brochure you can send us on what the process looks like. Like a week later, we had our first call with our social worker. When we do these things, we do them fast.
Yeah, you do. Wow. Okay.
And so the way it works here, it's in two phases. So your first phase is to check that like you're a functioning human being. So you get a medical, you get like a background check, you get a home visit to make sure is your home suitable for a child. Before we get too far down the road, like let's just check you don't have a weird criminal past.
Yeah.
Any big unknown health issues. They wouldn't stop you adopting if you did have a health issue. Okay. They just want to make sure that like you know what you're getting yourself into.
Right.
Because if you're bringing in an adopted child, a lot of the time they have additional needs. You need to be able to support that. So if you do have health issues, you need to know about them and have them under control.
And do they give you classes during this time as well? Or this is just to check you out? Oh, okay.
You do. And I always thought this was really interesting because you think like, oh, you're getting like these training classes when you're getting ready to adopt a child. It's going to be how to feed a child, how to dress a child. None of that.
No.
Absolutely none of it. It's here's how to recognize, what do they call it? Fetal alcohol syndrome. Here's how you might spot signs of abuse in a child. Some of it was actually really hard. We referred to the training as like, we called it being snow globed because it's like someone's taking your head and shaking it like a snow globe.
Oh God. Yeah, because you're hearing about so many atrocious things that can be done to children.
Yeah. And all these case studies that they had were actual cases that the social workers from our agency had dealt with. So, you know, the woman who was selling her child's wet nappies so that people could pass drug tests.
Oh, my God.
But it's because, you know, her kid obviously wouldn't have, I say obviously, that's not obvious, but her kid didn't have any drugs in their system.
Thank God.
It would pass the drug test.
Right.
But she did it because she'd been so horrendously abused as a child. Her parents had sold her out to dad's friends. So she was seeing this as breaking the cycle. At least I'm not doing that to my kid.
Oh, God.
It's so hard.
Hearing about all this stuff is, as a parent now, I mean, before I had kids, I think I could hear easier about some of the, like, not, like I could watch a movie where something happens and be okay. Now, I can't even. There is no, I don't want to hear about child abuse. I don't want to hear about, and I know it happens though. So it's good that there are people out there who can.
I know. And we had to, a part of it for an afternoon, we got put into small groups and like, okay, describe what sexual abuse of a child looks like.
Oh, jeez.
And what are, like, what would happen to that child? And what are the signs you might see? And I'm like, I don't want to do this.
Ay, ay, ay. I mean, you're not applying to be a social worker. You're applying to take a child in, so they would have already identified that for you, right?
But I think their point is, and I get it, like when they're taking a kid out of one of these situations and putting them in a new home, the bar is higher. It's not just can you keep this kid safe and dressed and get them to school and all the basic things that most parents have to do. You're getting a kid who's been through these things. Can you support them in the way that they need, because like knowing their background? It was awful.
Yeah, but I guess they have to suss out the chaff.
Yep. We also had to play what I called the world's worst game show. So there's all of us. This was all in late 2020, so it was all on Zoom.
Zoom.
We all had to sit with three pieces of paper. Would accept, would not accept, would discuss. And then they start you off easy. Would you accept a child of a different race, of a different religion? With a hearing impairment, with cerebral palsy, with hepatitis, with, and they went through anything you can think of. And we had to hold up these pieces of paper.
You had to do it in a group. Yeah.
Like, I don't know what anyone else held up. I was so, and I'm so, no one else, I'm sure, will remember what I held up. You feel like the worst person in the world saying, actually, no, I wouldn't take a kid with whatever.
Yeah. It's like even hard to say out loud because you do.
I feel horrible saying. Horrible.
I've spoken with others who've adopted in the States. They talk about this, having to fill out a questionnaire, but that they do in private together.
So that comes later. Yes.
Oh, okay.
This is to make you think about too. It. But yes.
Oh, God.
And the questionnaire was more detailed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a, you know, gut reaction. Because it's something that when you come to stage two of the process, you need to think about what will you accept?
Right.
And they would never hold it against you if you said, you know what? No, I won't take a kid who's a different race or has a visual impairment or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because what they want to know is that if they place a child with you, you're going to be able to support that child.
And they're going to be safe and loved.
Even things like race, we said, you know what? No, because our kid will have two dads. And I know how bullied I was at school. I hope we're now in a better place that my daughter won't be bullied at school for having two dads. But if you were to also add in racial bullying, like, I just don't know if I can help her through that.
You're not the first gay parent I've talked to who have had to answer that question that way because of the gay thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's deep. That's so sad.
Yeah, it really makes you reflect as well on, like, and, you know, things like some of the different disabilities, you know, if it's hepatitis, we said, or HIV, we said we'd discuss because was it identified at birth and is treated and is just a daily pill forever? Mm-hmm. Or was it only discovered years later when there's extensive liver damage as first time parents?
Right.
If they put a 4-year-old with us, what can we support?
Right. And you don't even know what to expect. You have no idea because you're not a parent yet. That's all of us, right? You have no idea what the love that happens with for the child and then the worry that happens surrounding the child. So, you know, you can't think about this before you're a parent because you don't know the toll it's going to take on yourself.
Exactly.
But you have to know if you can survive a sick child. Like, just the constant anxiety and worry and fear surrounding that.
And then, you know, our point always was, you know, if we have a second, these answers might be completely different. Because once you've gone through the baby stage and you've done all those, you know, the sleepless nights and the weaning and the going off to school, whatever, once you've done that bit, maybe what you can support is different. That was our approach to those questions, but it was just horrible, especially having to do it in a group.
Oh, God. Yeah. And you don't want to be judged.
Exactly. Nobody wants everyone to be judged. In the same boat. So, like I said, I didn't even notice what signs other people held up. So, for all I know, we were the most accepting out there. That's what who knows?
Who knows? Right. You're too wrapped up in just the questions to pay attention to what other people are doing. So, okay. So, you go through all these steps and then.
So, then you get into phase two, and that's when it gets much more details. That's when you have a social worker for stage one as well, but that's more just keeping things moving, do the medical, do the background check, etc. Phase two is when they then really study you. So you get homework. I can't even remember how many words my workbook was in the end, but it was in the tens of thousands of words we had to write.
About yourself?
Yeah. And like so detailed on every area of your life. So, you know, financial. Give us your payslips. Tell us your income, your outgoings. Like, can you financially support a child? Mm-hmm. Which again, to someone who accidentally gets knocked up, they don't have to go through this.
There are a lot of people who get knocked up who have no money.
Yep. But, you know, they always say the bar is higher because it has to be for these kids with extra needs.
Right.
So you go through all that. It was really interesting, some of this assessment, like talking to friends and family who were straight, because some of these questions we'd always thought about. They never did. So one section was all about identity. And the first question is, how do you identify?
Yeah.
Now, if you're one of us, this is a question you've thought about your whole life.
Yep.
You know, I'm a white, cis, gay man from Scotland, etc. Like, I've got my answer. I just wrote it all out.
Yeah.
We put this to my mother-in-law and she went, and eventually she came up with Scottish and Christian.
Uh-huh.
She never came up with a mother.
Interesting.
She never came up with white. All these things that like, because she's never had to examine her own identity. Ooh. So it was really interesting.
Yeah. Ooh, I want to ask that to all my friends now.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one because you'll see a completely different set of answers depending who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And how prepared they are.
Interesting. Yeah. Having to examine your own identity. And I mean, that's something we've been speaking about a lot, especially lately with the world the way it is.
But
yeah, that just put it into another light for me. I'm going to ask people that question. Tell me how you identify.
And then, you know, it goes through what's your views on education and is there anything medical you need to know about? What was your family environment growing up? And they write this massive report. We had a bit of a hiccup here. This was our first major hiccup.
Oh.
So we started this when we thought we were coming out of the pandemic. And what they told us is actually you could have been doing this the whole time. We kept going. We just moved it all online. I was like, yeah, but we weren't in a position to be able to do this. But then they had so many people when they thought we were coming out of it apply, which is great, but they didn't have enough social workers to support it. So one of those private agencies, they sort of contracted to do some of this assessment work for them, who would like prepare all the reports and everything and then give it back to them. But just meant, you know, those weekly meetings with your social worker and everything was done with someone else. One of the other things they do is 5 references. So 2 family, 3 non-family. And after one of our referees spoke to the social worker, she called us and said, I'm really sorry. I said, what? She said, what she's written in this report that she sent me for my signature, that's not what I said.
Oh.
She's completely misrepresented.
Whoa.
So one of the things was, you know, talking about medical history. And I'm asthmatic. And what our friend said was, oh, yeah, until he told me, I wouldn't have known he was asthmatic because it's so well controlled, was what she meant. What the social worker wrote was, hides medical problems.
What the fuck?
Yeah. She also, the first meeting we had with her, she went, oh, by the way, I'm leaving. So I'm only going to do a couple of these meetings with you. And then, I don't know, they'll find someone else, I'm sure.
Okay, thanks.
Great. This is only the rest of our lives and our ability to get a child here.
Wow, that's messed up.
We went to everybody we could think of that we'd spoken to in stage one and been like, you have to help us.
Yeah.
And they eventually got us a different social worker from our local authority. So,
oh, okay.
And she was brilliant. As soon as she took over, you know, we started over. She was like, I'm just going to throw out everything. We're going to start again. I said, great.
For second parent adoption here in the States, when you go through that, a social worker comes and asks you a bunch of invasive questions like that, but it's just one visit for second, you know, it's like second parent adoption.
Oh no, this was weekly calls for like 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
Plus we had homework in between that we had to send to her, like all the stuff we'd write about, you know, your views on, let's say education was the topic for that week. So we'd fill in this workbook, send it to her, she'd review it, and then we'd have the meeting to go through the answers.
Wow, they're very thorough.
It really is.
Yeah.
It was a lot. At the end of it, they prepare this big report, the Prospective Adopters Report, which goes to a panel to approve you as a potential adoptive parent.
I've heard of this. Yeah,
One of the other parts of it, and one thing we wanted, so most adopted kids, at least here, they go through 5 foster homes in 450 days on average before they get their forever home.
Oh.
So these kids, like, they move a lot. Which means most of the kids you're getting in the system are like 3, 4 or older.
Right.
Everybody wants a baby.
Right.
But they generally don't put babies for adoption.
Oh.
Because how do you know that that's the right thing for that kid?
So they try to get the parent and the child back together.
They always try and keep families together. Like if you go on social media, they just want to take your kids off you. No, they don't. They really don't want to take your kids off you. They do everything they can to keep families together. Mm. When that doesn't work is when they take the kids.
And they'll do foster care first, sounds like. So when they get to this space where, okay, we have to remove the child, we're going to foster for at least however long you said.
Yes, it's like 1.5 years, often because it just takes that long to get the right adoptive family for that kid.
Wow, it does seem very different than the States.
But one of the things that they do, and it's relatively recent, is some places call it foster to adopt, some call it early permanence. And we said, this is what we want. So actually, sometimes they do remove a kid at birth and put them with prospective adopters as foster parents.
Right, foster. We have foster to adopt here.
And we said, we want that. So you have to do some extra training, and there's an extra bit on your prospective adopters report.
Right.
And you have to be approved as foster carers as well as adoptive parents. But we said, we want this. It's a lot of risk because the social worker says, we're going to remove this baby at birth. no judge has ever looked at the case. Like, no family court has been involved in many cases. Like, it's just the social workers saying, we believe a judge would agree with us. Hopefully. There's no guarantees.
And you could even have that, you could have the baby for a year and lose the baby to the family still.
And that has happened.
Yes.
Here.
You have to have a thick skin.
Yeah. And so, like, when you go through the training, they did have, I think we were the 11th in our area to do this. Mm-hmm. And one of the previous 10, they obviously don't give you all the data, but one of them, the kid did go back after a year because the judge said, actually, I don't think you did everything you could with that birth family.
Oh, God. My heart goes out to the birth family, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, you want that for them. And then also, this little family that's been formed the past year.
Yeah.
It's a no-win situation here. Like, it just feels painful on all counts.
Yeah. And it was a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're taking on that risk. Hopefully, the baby's getting the best start in life, whatever happens. And so, but we went for it. Mm-hmm. And we were approved for both. So we said, like, we would take an older kid. We would prefer foster to adopt. But, mm-hmm. you know, there had only been 10 before us in our area. So if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But that's our preference. Mm-hmm. You then go to a panel who get your report and they interview you and decide whether or not to approve you. And it's made up of, like, you know, there's a social worker, there's someone who adopted before, there was a doctor, there was a guy that worked at IBM. They get all sorts of folks from just random people.
Who chooses the people?
I don't know. There's a random mix of people and you're so stressed that you, like, only half listen to what they say anyway.
Right.
So, you know, you talk to them, we got the approval.
Okay.
Whew. Which was, I know. This was all on Zoom as well.
Oh, God. So nerve-wracking.
So, of course, you come out of the panel and then you just close your laptop and now what?
You wait.
And I stupidly decided, I'm going to decorate the kids' room.
Yeah.
I got wallpaper.
Yeah, you did.
We did her room. Not knowing if we were even going to get a kid or when it might be. Is this room going to sit there for 2 years?
Or if it was going to be a girl or a boy.
So it's animals. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Because you said her room, so I didn't know if you did.
Oh, but yeah, now we know it's a her.
Now you know. Okay.
Yeah. You know, when we do things fast, and the universe seems to support us in that. Now, they say if you've not heard anything in 6 months, they might tweak some of your report to help your case. But most people, you know, 6 to 12 months is a reasonable expectation. So 3 weeks later, I'm folding laundry. And I joke to my husband, like, can't believe they haven't called us yet. That's so homophobic. It's been 3 weeks. Literally 10 minutes later, my phone rings.
Wow.
And it's our social worker. And I'm like, oh, maybe she's just checking in.
Yeah.
She's like, a little girl's been born. Do you want her?
Oh, my God.
And we were like,
oh, my God.
We need to know a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they send us all this stuff about everything the social worker can tell them. You know, what's known about the family? This was a foster to adopt. Like, what's the case? Like, how likely is it that we'd get to keep this child? And we weren't the first choice as parents either.
This is a question I have. You know, in the States, they send the prospective adoptive parents' bios to these birth parents, and the birth parent is the one who makes the decisions in many. But not in the foster to adopt situations. And
so right. It's the social worker typically here.
Interesting.
And so we have a social worker, and our now daughter had her own social worker, and they have to be different people.
Uh-huh.
And there's a, like, matching group who have all the bios, and they pick the three best matches, they think, and send them to the kid's social worker.
Oh.
And so the kid's social worker, you know, in our case, she picked a different family and said, here's this child. Now, part of being a foster parent is you then take the kids to see their birth family in a supervised setting.
Right.
And so they tell you in the training that could be up to 5 times a week.
Oh, wow.
Be prepared, depending on the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was 2 times a week for an hour. And this other family were like, oh, can we think about that? That's quite a lot to take on. And the social worker said, no.
No?
If you're not willing to go out 2 times a week for an hour...
For this baby's birth parent.
Exactly. Like, this isn't the right thing for you.
Right.
So then that meant that they lost a few days. So then they came to us and we were like, of course, whatever. Like, don't care where it is. Don't care how often. Yep, we'll do it. And so then they were like, oh, okay, well, we need to sort some paperwork. We need to get approvals and things. And then they called us a few days later and said, could you pick her up tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.?
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I'm like, okay, let me call my boss and tell her I'm not going to be there for 6 months because I need to take leave because I'm getting a baby.
And newborn?
She was 9 days old when she came to us.
Oh, my God. Wow. Congrats.
It was a whirlwind. We got in the car to come home. So we went to pick her up. She got put into emergency foster care for a few days. Mm. We went to pick her up. We got in the car and I started driving. I was like, why is this car behind me like flashing their lights? Like, what's the problem? I looked. I was like, oh, I'm doing 20 miles an hour in a 50. Because I had this tiny baby. I was so scared. It's like, what if something happens?
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling.
We'll be right back.
Podcast, love is love.
All right, now that we know that Liam got the baby, phew, I got to take a second and tell you about my sponsor for this year's episode, California Cryobank. What you're going to do is you're going to go to cryobank.com. You're going to use code love is love, and that's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. If you are getting ready to create your family and your route is going to be donor sperm, I highly recommend California Cryobank. I made my babies there, as you all know, and they really are doing the work when it comes to L'Egyptiquois folks in our community. And they have a really wonderful selection of donors, and it doesn't hurt to just go look. So what you're going to do is go to cryobank.com, use code LOVEISLOVE. You're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that code for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. They have wonderful, wonderful perks for us L'Egyptiquois folks, like legal resources, all kinds of things. Go check them out. Go check out their catalog. And maybe, just maybe, you'll find your donor. Let's go, guys. Let's go. Let's make the next generation of awesome, awesome individuals. All right, let's get back to Liam's story. Thanks.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Love is love.
This is the thing with like kind of adoption, I guess. You're working towards it for so long, but in the end, it really just always gets thrust upon you in a way, as opposed to like finally getting pregnant and knowing your surrogate is pregnant. Like there's at least a little bit of a buildup to knowing it's happening.
And like in typical adoption here, you do get more notice because you do like a 2-week transition. So you start with like a bump into. So you bump into the kid in the park and pretend to be a friend of the foster carer. Mm-hmm. And then you'll go to their house for an hour. And then you'll go for lunch and you build up and build up until then the kid comes to you for lunch or then for an afternoon. You know, you got a few weeks. We had 19 hours. They called us at 3 p.m. and said, pick her up at 10.
Was her family in crisis? I mean, you probably can't speak to that.
We had real confidence that the family court would agree that adoption was the best thing for our daughter because there are older siblings. Mm. And when the judge ruled that those should be permanently removed from birth family, birth mom was actually already pregnant with our daughter, but hiding it.
Yeah.
It was such a short window that, you know, if it had been a few years, they would have said, well, maybe things have changed. Let's reassess. Let's go back to giving her the support, the classes, the whatever. But they're like, it's been 6 months. And ultimately, the judge agreed that no. But then, of course, we then had the fun of foster to adopt. We sort of knew that that meant, you know, we had to go to pediatrician appointments every 10 to 15 days. They want to monitor the kid really closely and make sure they're doing okay.
Regardless of the fact that it's a newborn, even if the kid was 4 or 5, same thing.
They would do very regular medical checks. Our social worker had to come out every few weeks. Our daughter's social worker had to come out every few weeks. There's a fostering social worker who had to come out every few weeks. Here, I don't think you've got the same in the US. Here you get a health visitor who's like a nurse whose job is to basically look after all the kids in an area until they go to school. So they come out, typically they check on the kid and mum usually. So, you know, they do weights and measurements and they check development and they're sort of also just making sure everything's okay at home.
Wait, is this every family or this is just...
Everyone. Everyone gets a health visitor.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's actually by law because there was years ago now, there was a kid called Baby P who can't be named for legal reasons, who nobody was ever checking in on this family. And it turned out the kid was experiencing a lot of abuse.
Oh, God.
So now there is always this named... We call them health visitors. They are nurses, but that's their job, is to just go out and check on kids under 5 at home.
Wow.
And they're like, you know, mandatory reporters and things. So they're there to check on baby and mom, but also just to keep an eye.
Wow. That's new for me. In the States, you have a baby, they're like, bye, good luck.
In some ways, it was like that because we now had this newborn with like no notice. Coincidentally, my in-laws were visiting. It had always been planned the day we got the phone call. So we were like, okay, you need to go and buy us everything.
Yeah.
We have nothing.
Oh my God.
And it's like, I'm the oldest of a large family. So like I knew how to do nappies and all those, you know, basics of keeping a child alive. So I was like, okay, this isn't too bad. Mm-hmm. And it turns out once you've done like 2 or 3, it's fine.
Yeah.
You learn pretty quick.
You do. You do what has to be done. That's it.
But we often joke that like it felt like we needed a revolving door on our house because there was all these social workers and all these medical people just constantly in and out the house.
And you're taking the baby 2 times a week to the birth family.
Yes. So we'd go to like our local council offices. We'd go to a little side door, hand her over to the social worker. We'd leave and we'd come back an hour later and pick her up again. We never met birth family.
You never met birth family.
They always say through the process, they recommend you meet. Mm-hmm. And we said, okay, if the social workers say yes, that's what we'll do.
Right.
Like we will do whatever is right for this kid because hopefully she'll stay with us forever. But if she doesn't, we want to know that we've done the best job we can.
Right.
This specific situation, they said, actually, it's best that you don't. And the emergency foster carer that she was with said she's been doing it for like 15 years and she's only ever heard of that happen one other time. So I was like, oh.
Wow.
So I'm very curious about this birth family, but we never got to meet.
It feels like there's like so much that's left unspoken a little bit, like in the dark.
Yeah.
Which gives me a little bit of unease. I don't know. Like there's a lot that's just in the dark here.
And like we get a lot of information from the social workers. So like we know a reasonable amount about the birth family. But yes, it was all a bit of a whirlwind.
This is a stressful road to parenthood. I will tell you what, this is stressful. I am stressed out just listening to this.
Oh,
and I've listened to a lot of alternative routes to parenthood, to speak. Okay.
But through it, there's 3 important court dates. So there's one, and we don't get to go to any of them.
Oh.
Our social worker goes to represent us because birth family are there.
Can you imagine if it was that other social worker talking about how you hide your sicknesses? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like you get paired with the wrong social worker, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to represent yourself at all.
We don't get to go. No.
Okay.
We get told when they're happening, but that's it.
I have too much anxiety over this.
Honestly, it was such a stressful time. But when you've got a, you know, 2-month-old baby, like, your brain can't do anything.
You go take care of it. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So the first one is to make the case that the child should be removed from birth family. our child's social worker. It turned out she was quite newly qualified and didn't actually have all the qualifications she needed to do it solo. So her boss had to accompany her to a lot of these things.
Okay.
She would often forget to tell us that, like, you know, we're sitting there, we knew this court date was happening at, let's say, 10 a.m. And we're sitting there and it's 2, 3, 4 o'clock. And we're like, what's happening? She's like,
right.
Oh yeah, the judge said yes. I was like, okay, thank you.
You didn't think we might want to know?
She just forgot. I was like, okay.
Oh God. Oh, Jesus, I can't take this.
So then there's a second court date to say this kid should be placed for adoption. Mm-hmm. And again, the judge said yes. And again, we had to chase to find that out.
I can't with her.
Then your prospective adopter's report from all the way back when, you go back to that same panel of people, this time with the child, to say, do you approve this match? Not just us as adopters, but us with this child.
Right.
And they say yes. And then that all goes to the judge again, who will rule, can these people adopt this child? Oof. And that was all set to go. And we had our court date. And then...
Oh, God.
We call it the Somerset case. So Somerset's in the south of England, and there is a case where a birth family were objecting to their kid being adopted out, which is their right to do. Uh-huh. And they had legal representation who were fighting their case. Absolutely. Because you need to be sure it's the right thing for these kids. Mm-hmm. Their legal representation had noticed that there was two steps in the process that were done the wrong way around. So part of it, the kid has to go for a complete medical, and then a doctor has to write a report that goes to your local council, who make the recommendation and put in the paperwork to the court. They had the actual, like, raw medical that said this kid's fine, but the doctor hadn't written a letter to say this kid's fine. The person at the council is not a doctor, therefore legally is not competent to interpret a medical. So when they made that application to the court, it was lacking. And we were like, okay, but we're at literally the opposite end of the country here. Right. There's only one county further away in the whole country. Mm-hmm. Why do we care? Because the judge looked and said, yeah, you're right. Process wasn't followed. Let's check all the cases in Somerset. And they found like 10 where the same thing happened. And then they went, well, if there's 10, let's check the whole country. So they paused all adoptions in England and Wales.
Oh, my God.
For like 6 months.
Because a doctor didn't write a letter.
Because, yeah, I mean, the report said this kid's fine.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with this child. But the doctor hadn't put that in like a report that a non-medical person could be legally competent to understand.
Right.
Even though these people who work in child protection have seen so many of these. So we're sitting there. And we knew, actually, in our case, the same thing had happened. The application went into the court before the medical report. We knew this had happened to us.
Oh, no.
So we're like, so now what?
Oh, God.
And it was 6 months of various courts on all different courts with different jurisdictions, all fighting, trying to decide what's the best thing to do. Like 6 months later, eventually, the higher court said, okay, just don't do it again. Like, carry on as you were. Any that were already in progress, like, keep going. Don't do it again.
A little pat on the butt. Now and let's we're like, move forward.
Okay.
Okay. Even though we had nothing to do with that, but okay, thank you.
But then our local family court said, I don't know if I agree with that ruling. Let me think on it a little more. Took another month. And then said, yeah, okay, I agree.
Wow. What the hell?
You know, with foster to adopt, if everything had gone smoothly, it would have gone from her coming home with us to the final adoption order, like 6-8 months is quite typical. Mm-hmm. I think it was 20 months in the end for us.
Oh, my God. But she was with you the whole time.
She was with us the whole time.
So that's something good. But was there a fear that they might, that they could take her?
Yeah.
Because
at any point, a judge could say, actually, no.
Right. And it was being passed around to so many things.
Yeah. And like, so we're just in this limbo. Opinions. And no one can tell us anything. And our social worker, she's in the exact same position. She doesn't know anything we don't know.
Yeah.
And we're not her only case. So
she's
got all these folks. Some of them,
my God.
You know, I said a typical adoption, you do the 2-week sort of transition. Mm-hmm. Some folks had got into the second week of that and were told, actually, no. And they had to stop.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine how disruptive that is for the child, the foster family?
Mm-mm.
Like, mm-mm. It was madness.
Wow.
And our daughter's like perfectly healthy. There was nothing wrong with her.
Yeah.
At all. But
yeah.
A doctor didn't write it in plain language. We just had this medical report that said, yep, she's fine.
Just the red tape or whatever they call it. It's ridiculous. Okay, so that's stressful as all hell. But now she's yours officially.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's 3 and a half now. So
Yay.
Different kind of stress.
Yeah. It keeps building on each on top of itself. So
I know.
Yeah. But was there ever any worry of you being a gay couple? Like, was that ever fear for you? Or is it pretty like they don't really question it or care?
You know, going into it, I kind of thought maybe there would be, but there really wasn't from anybody in the process.
That's great.
And in fact, one of the social workers who does a lot of the training sessions, she always said, actually, gay couples often have an easier time of it.
Right.
Because, you know, your kid needs to find out at some point they're adopted. When there's no one with a uterus in the house, it's much more obvious. It's an easier thing to discuss.
I bet you the social workers know that the gay parents are going to talk about their origin story. Like, they're going to.
Yeah.
Like you just said, like, and I think the social workers probably intuitively realize that it's just an easier segue into the conversation that should be happening in every family.
Exactly. They say, like, by the time the kid is 7, there should be no new information.
Yeah.
There can be color and flflavor because, you know, if there was drug abuse and sexual abuse and whatever, you're not going to tell a 5-year-old that.
No.
But they need to know that, you know, you were in a family that couldn't look after you. And so you came to live with that. Like, they need to know the bare, the basic facts.
Yeah.
You know, if it is a straight couple, actually, weirdly, through all of our training, we were the only gay couple in any of those sessions.
Huh.
I expected it to be a lot more.
Yeah. I would have thought so, too. That was going to be one of my questions, but I just figured there were more. So I didn't ask the question.
I was really surprised. Like, that's a lie. One of our training sessions, there was a young lesbian couple.
Huh. Okay.
Everyone else was straight.
Interesting.
I thought really surprising, but.
We need more queers adopting because we're better parents anyway. Let's be real.
Of course.
I have one more question. What about the siblings? Do you get to have any contact with the siblings who were put into the system?
Again, like the social worker said, like in this sort of situation, normally you would do 2 meetings, a hello and a goodbye. But because of what the family had been through, those kids would end up so like dysregulated and it was really distressing, particularly for the oldest, that they said, actually, maybe we just exchange some pictures and leave it at that. One of the other things they do here, and I assume this is across the whole country, but it's certainly here, is we have our postbox. So once a year, we write a letter to birth family.
Oh, okay.
And that's they have good. The opportunity to write a letter back.
Oh.
So we do our letter and we send it off and, you know, she's doing well, etc. Here's, you know, we went to Spain on holiday and she loves Moana, etc. Keep it generic, but just let them know that she's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
They did say, like, don't expect to hear back until the kid's like 16 or 17, because then birth family think, oh, well, when she's 18, she'll come find us.
Right.
So we've never heard back.
Oh.
But we send our letters. I hope the boys are doing well, but
we'll
never know unless they decide to write back. Maybe when they're older.
Right. They might, you know, want to find that baby sister that they know about. It's so tough to really, if you think long and hard about the whole story and where, what happened before. And it's amazing that she has you as parents and then you're doing everything you can to keep her safe and sound.
And it's like you said, like now you hear these stories of what goes on with some kids. And I can't even think about it.
I know.
You see stories in the news of, you know, what happened to this. I'm like, nope, I can't even read the story.
No, not anymore. Before kids, I could watch stuff. Not anymore.
Yeah, like I obviously didn't enjoy it, but like, okokay, these are things that are going on in the world. Now, don't get me wrong. She tests my patience sometimes, but.
But, exactly.
I would never like,
oh my God.
I couldn't.
Are you crazy? I read the Game of Thrones series right before I became a mother, and I was able to stomach Game of Thrones, probably because I wasn't a mother yet, because a boy gets thrown off a balcony.
Yeah.
We're talking about so many atrocities to children in this episode. I am sorry, everyone. but I was able to stomach it, and then I watched the series because it was okay. And then the new series came out that talks, I don't know if you're familiar with Game of Thrones. Anyways, the precursor series, which is about...
We never watched that one, but... I know of
which
it.
Is the Targaryens rise in power when they were in their heyday or whatever. my point is, we watched the first episode and I was like, oh, because I am so into Game of Thrones and my wife gets so annoyed. So I was like, Anne, whoo, second one is on tonight. Yeah, yeah. I'm like so excited. They killed a baby boy. I was so livid. I was like, how dare they? I won't watch it again. I won't touch the show again. I was like yelling at the TV. I turned it off. I was like, how dare? Yeah, but that's my point is, I feel you on that. I can't handle the talk of things possibly happening terribly. And thank God you were there for this little girl, because she seems to have a good life now.
And that's what I just always think is, we actually found out later that a million years ago, we lived around the corner when her oldest sibling was there.
Oh, whoa.
It was literally a 3-minute walk from where we used to live.
Oh my God.
And it's just the things that go on and other, it just doesn't bear thinking about.
Right. You have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is turning into such a dark, I'm sorry, listeners.
But she's with us. She's happy. She's healthy. I feel really smug because this kid will eat literally anything. There is nothing this kid won't eat.
Good job. Wow.
I know. I don't know how we've done it. I don't know
that
what we did.
That could change. It could change.
It will, I'm sure. Because she's 3.5. But for now, you know, we always joke we're the most middle-class child.
Yeah.
We went on holiday last year and she was having lobster mac and cheese. She tried caviar. New Year's Day, she was eating venison pate with smoked cheeses. And also, I'm like, you're 3.
So European sounding.
Like when I was 3, I don't know what I ate, but definitely not that. It was definitely beige.
I was definitely eating like raisins in a box. That's what I was eating.
I mean, that's a fruit. I don't know that I would have eaten that as a kid.
That was a big snack in the 80s for kids, raisins. Everybody had a box of raisins in their lunchbox.
All my friends did, but I was so fussy.
Oh, okay. I was too. I hate, actually, I could stomach raisins. There's a lot of things I don't like, but anyway. It's great that you were there for her, and now you're, what does she call you guys?
We thought it was going to be Dad and Daddy, but as she grew up, she just started calling me Dada, so that's what stuck.
And aww, so, Dada. I love it. I love it. Congratulations. And is this it? Are you guys done? You don't want to go through that anxiety again, do you?
Well, we always said we did. But if you've already done it once, you don't have to do everything again. You have to redo your medical and some of stage 2. Like some of the like in-depth personal assessment you redo because you have to reevaluate your finances and your home environment because now there's another person.
Yeah.
Like my family is like 300 miles away. His family's like 150 miles away. And, you know, they're getting on in years. And it's true what they say. It takes a village.
Takes a village.
And we're so lucky. Like, our neighbors are great. They love her. They will babysit and everything. You don't want to, like, abuse that so that they'll continue to do it.
Uh-huh.
And with the hours that we work and things, like, just trying to sort childcare, especially once one's in school and one's not, we've decided that if we had family close by, we would definitely do it again.
Right.
But because we don't, it's too much.
Look at that intention right there. Very intentional. Very intentional.
It was like a year of discussions to decide that. But
yeah, you put a lot of thought into that. I appreciate you for that.
Because the bar is higher for adoptive parents, they always say, because it has to be. They're right.
Mm-hmm.
But it also forces you to really think about what can I accept and what is reasonable and can I give the best home to these kids? And I know there will be other kids out there that we could give a great home to, but probably not as good as they'll hopefully find.
Right.
People who with a better support network and, you know, family close by and whatever else. So wasn't an easy decision, but.
No. And you never know. Things could change, you know. So, yeah, you know, there's one thing we know for sure is that change is inevitable.
Yes, for sure.
But I love how intentional you were about that decision. And it does take a village. And it sounds like you're doing a good job and you have a good little family going on right now. So keep it that way, you know.
She tests our patients a lot, but we do have a good one.
Yay. Well, congratulations 3 years ago. I can't, I'm still stressed out from hearing that story.
Oh, yeah. That was the other thing. It was such a mega stressful time. And we know those same things wouldn't happen again. But like, it was a lot.
Oof, it is a lot. Wow. These paths to parenthood are not for the faint of heart. And that's why, I'll say it again, us queers are better.
We are. In every way.
Every way. Oh, well, thank you so much, Liam. This has been awesome.
No, thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge, huge thank you once again to California Cryobank for sponsoring this here little show for an entire year of episodes. Go to cryobank.com, use code LOVEISLOVE, and get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Go do it. Let's make those babies and uplift these queer families, y'all. Thank you.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.